Thank Brother Art for his prayer again, and I caught that he said that my memory kind of stuck out to me because that memory is fading somewhat. Sometimes it scares me a little bit the way it's going, but I guess it's normal. I'm not sure. But I do appreciate your prayer and the prayer of each of you for speaker this evening. Subject tonight is Character Matters. Adam Clark was an assistant in a dry goods store, selling silks and satins to a cultured clientele. One day his employer suggested to him that he try stretching the silk as he measured it out. This would increase sales and profits and also increase Adam's value to the company. Young Clark straightened up from his work, faced his boss courageously and said, "Sir, your silk may stretch, but my conscience won't." The book, The Day America Told the Truth, reported the following. 91% of those surveyed admitted to lying about something on a regular basis. 50% procrastinate, in effect, doing nothing one full day out of every five in a work week. And 74% steal from those who will not miss it. Examples of such stealing include taking office supplies from work, long lunch breaks, extravagant meals, accepting gifts from customers, ignoring copyright laws, claiming improper deductions, etc. I doubt whether that survey in that book really surprises us too much. We're aware that in society there's a lack of true character. In fact, sometimes we have to wonder if it even knows what character is. If you're aware of it, but recently there was a professional basketball player that came out and admitted that he was gay. And I just happened to hear yesterday, I guess it was, a commentator reporting about that and referring to it as if it's something to celebrate because he had the courage. And we ought to be celebrating it. Does the world know true character? But what about those who are supposed to be different? Is there a lack of character amongst professing believers? This leads to a more important question that we all need to ask ourselves, and that is, how is my own character? Now, we all have character. It's either good or it's bad. But we all have it. Chuck Swindoll, in defining character, says this, and I quote, "The moral, ethical, and spiritual undergirding that rests on truth, that reinforces a life in stressful times and resists all temptations to compromise," unquote. Another person wrote, "Character is what we truly are compared to what we seem to be." So to put it simply, I like things simple, don't you? Put it simply, character is what we are. Character is what we are. Not to downplay the importance of an education, but to say how very important character is. There's more than once that we've told the students here at school that you know, their academics are fine, and that's important, it has a place, but more important than that is to get character or good character in life, and to have that as part of your life. And in this account of Joseph in Genesis 39, we see a man with good character, one who's an example to follow and learn from. We know the story well, but to go over it quickly in paraphrasing, Joseph, having been sold into slavery by his brothers, was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelites, and in Egypt, Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites, and Joseph served Potiphar. It's interesting what verse 3 says, and Art said that verse 4 stuck out, and right before that, verse 3, "And his master, Potiphar saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. In other words, Potiphar saw that there was something special about this man. There was something different. Something so special that Joseph was made the overseer of all of Potiphar's estate. Now you think of that. Now I don't claim to have a real large estate, but for someone to be in complete control of all of my finances or all my ownings, I better have a really complete trust in that person. Someone that I have know is going to care for it and at my interests and have my interests involved. Joseph was steward of all of Potiphar's belongings. Things were looking up, so to speak, for Joseph. Circumstances that looked very bleak had taken a turn for the good. Except there was a problem. Potiphar's wife. She made numerous sexual advances to Joseph, which he refused. Then, taking advantage of no men in the house, she tried again in verse 12, and she called him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out. Again, Joseph refusing to compromise. And then Potiphar's wife, seeing that didn't work, fabricated a lie and claimed that Joseph made an advance on her. And her husband believes her story and puts Joseph in prison. And that's the story in a quick summary. But what we want to do is draw some thoughts about good character from this account. And the first one, and you know, you could pull some other thoughts, and I'm sure, and we may completely miss something that you'd be thinking of, but hopefully these six will be helpful to us. But the first one we'd like to consider is that good character does not always mean pleasant temporal results. What Joseph got in return for his good character is deserving of the classic three words, "It's not fair." Carol and I have, or our family has, some friends, close friends, that she works in a bank. And I guess it was about a week ago, or no, it was this past week. A customer came in. She's been employed there for, I believe, 8 years. Customer came in and had money in an envelope, okay? She got the money out of the envelope, and there was a nickel that fell out onto the floor, went under the cabinet. So she got down her hands and knees, tried to get the nickel. She couldn't reach the nickel, so she went over to her own purse, pulled out a nickel, and put it in the person's account. Sounds like a good deed, doesn't it? A nice deed of honesty and helping her out, sharing. She was fired for not writing out a store shortage over a nickel. It's not fair. Person with character, professing believer, was rather vocal at times about her faith. At work, it's not fair. Good character does not always mean pleasant temporal results. You know, it's natural for us to think, if I do something good and right, I ought to get the same in return, right? That's what I should get back. However, we need to remember that we don't have good character. Now, I think this is important for us to grasp. We don't have good character for the purpose of getting good results. Rather, good character is itself a result of doing what is right based on the truth. We don't have good character for the purpose of getting good results. Rather, good character is itself a result of doing what is right based on the truth. And then we let the chips fall where they fall. Though good character for the believer does not always bring pleasant or temporal results, or pleasant temporal results, I should say, more importantly, secondly, good character does bring God's blessing. If you look at this account, Joseph was experiencing God's blessing in the good times. Beginning of the chapter, things were going great. Experiencing God's blessing. It looked like everything was on the, it was great. God was blessing him. He was with him. Joseph surely had good character at that point. Then after all the advances and what took place and the lie that was told about him, now he's thrown in prison. At the end of the chapter, God's blessing was still upon Joseph, even in the bad times. Good character brings God's blessing. Look at the end of the chapter to go over again. But the Lord was with Joseph, showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. God's blessing includes his presence. The Lord was with Joseph. God's blessing included his mercy. He showed Joseph mercy. And God's blessing included his involvement in Joseph's unpleasant circumstances. So even though the temporal or the circumstances were unpleasant, God was still blessing Joseph for his good character by giving him his presence, his mercy, and being involved in those circumstances. Good character does not go unnoticed by God. It will bring his blessing in ways that will far outweigh any unpleasant temporal circumstances. You know, Joseph proved his character, his good character to God that day, and God honored it in days that followed. Although Joseph's good character resulted in him becoming a victim of injustice, it also resulted in Joseph becoming a recipient of God's blessing. Think of that. You know, sometimes we think, well, I did this, that was a good act. Or this was an honest thing I did, or an honest thing I spoke, or action. And look what I'm getting back. Though maybe becoming, we feel like we're recipients or victims of injustice, we're still going to be a recipient of God's blessing. Good character brings God's blessing. Thirdly, a thought from this account is that good character does not invite temptation. Verse 11, and it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And I'm jumping around through the story, but hopefully that doesn't matter. Good character does not invite temptation. Joseph wasn't some place that he wasn't supposed to have been. He wasn't doing something that he shouldn't have been. He was going about his business. And then still, he had to run from temptation. All he was doing was going about his daily business, and he still found himself in a position that he had to run from temptation. Good character doesn't invite temptation. It doesn't play with fire. Why is that? Because good character knows that it can't handle fire. You know, it's interesting, if you think about it, if at times when we're just going about our business and the only escape for us is to run, think about it. How in the world do we think we could handle it if we're playing with fire? We can't. We can't. Good character does not invite temptation. Joseph wasn't inviting it. All he was doing was going about his business, what he was supposed to be doing. Fourthly, good character refuses to believe Satan's lies. Dropping back a verse to verse 10. And it came to pass, remember there were numerous sexual advances before this. This verse is referring to that. And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day. Okay, that's more than one. So there was a continual onslaught of temptation that he hearkened not unto her. In other words, he chose not to listen or to believe Satan's lies. The sooner we learn to view all of temptation as a lie of Satan, the better off we'll be. Satan will say, you need this in order for this. He'll say, you'll be better off with this. He'll say, this will bring satisfaction. If you just do this, you'll have satisfaction. He'll say, no one will know. Satan will say, this is better than what you have. You'll be more content with this if you just indulge. I think it was this week, Brother Ken, in one of his opening remarks here at school, because I took note to it, he said that contentment is realizing that God has given me right now all I need to be happy. Think about that. I like that. Contentment is realizing that God has given me everything I need right now to be happy. That's not what Satan tells us. Are we going to believe his lies? When we see temptation in this light, it makes a difference. It'll make a difference in how we respond to it. If I see every temptation, you know what? That's a lie of Satan. It'll make a difference how I respond to it, because we'll understand that the lies of Satan are not going to bring the results that we want. You know, Satan's goal has been to eliminate the truth, to eliminate it, to get rid of it. He's been attacking it since the Garden of Eden when he asked Eve, when he said, hath God said? In other words, are you sure that's true? However, Satan has not been able to get rid of the truth, has he? Still have it. He's been able to get it removed from governments, from schools, and the lives of individuals, but the truth marches on, as somebody has put it in the form of a song. It says, down the corridors of time, invincible, God's word, the truth is invincible, divine, until all that's false is finally gone. You know, the truth marches on. That's exactly what will happen. The truth will never go away till all that's false is finally gone. But until that time, Satan will continue to attack the truth, attack the truth, attack the truth. Realizing he can't get rid of it, what's he try to do? He tries to hide it, smear it over a little bit, mix it. Things that sound good but are tainted and just enough that it's not true. He tries to get us to question it. You know, someone has said that the deadliest attacks against the truth come from inside the church, not from the outside. Now think about that. I think it's true. Those inside the church who have replaced the truth or mixed it with something that's not true. The deadliest attacks against the truth come from inside the church, not the outside. Jude addresses that. He talks of contending for the faith or contending for the truth. Why? Because of those who had crept in unawares. Where? Into the church. You know, that's true for the church, I believe, but I think it's also true for us as individuals. Think about this. If someone were to try to tell you or try to tell me something that I know is not true, you gonna believe it? I doubt it. You'd like to reject it, right? But when it's presented in thought, inside of us, by Satan, and at a time when our heart's not quite right what it should be, we're quicker to entertain the lies and we start to question the truth. And Satan knows that these attacks from the inside will cause division, they'll cause confusion. Whereas attacks from the outside really do the opposite. They tend to unite us. That concept can be seen just from when you think back to 9/11. What happened? Attacks from the outside. Country was united all of a sudden. USA, USA, we were united for what it was worth for a certain amount of a time. But what is tearing our country down? Attacks from the inside. Attacks from the inside. Because attacks from the outside unite us. Attacks from the inside confuse us, divide us. Same is true, I believe, spiritually speaking, concerning the truth, with us as individuals, as a church. Not as a church congregation, as a church in general. The whole body of Christ. Good character refuses to believe Satan's lies. Fifthly, good character sees that all sin is against God. Joseph's response to Potiphar's wife in verse 9, there is none greater in this house than I. Joseph said, I, basically saying, I'm top command. There's nobody any greater here in this house than me. Neither hath he kept, meaning her husband, kept back anything from me but you, his wife, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against Potiphar? That's not what he said. He said against God. Because Joseph understood that all sin, yes, he would have been sinning against Potiphar, he would have been sinning against Potiphar's wife, but he realized that ultimately all sin is against God. David realized the same thing in Psalm 51 when he was pleading for God's mercy after his sin with Bathsheba and desiring to be cleansed from his sins. Verse 3 says, for I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is ever before thee. He had sinned against Bathsheba, hadn't he? He had sinned against her husband. He wasn't all around anymore, but he had sinned against him. But in verse 4 he says, against thee, thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest. In other words, David knew that his sin, all of it, was against God. That's what really mattered. Oh, it mattered that it was against Bathsheba, but it really mattered the most that it was against God. If we see all sin as against God, then it makes no difference if someone else knows about it, because God does. Then all temptation, if I realize or I see all sin is against God, then all temptation is realized as trying to cause me to sin against God, whether someone knows about it or not. See, it doesn't matter. I believe that realizing that all sin is against God helps us to have a fuller and right perspective, to be able to look down the road past the immediate moment, to not be as quick to act on impulse or without thinking. How many times have we said or thought, you know, maybe we've said, well, I just didn't think. I mean, I just acted on impulse. When we see that all sin is against God, God, it'll help us to realize, you know what, I can see beyond the moment. I can't just act on impulse. I have to think this through. Good character does not always mean there will be pleasant temporal results. Good character does bring God's blessing, regardless of those temporal results. Good character does not invite temptation. It refuses to believe Satan's lies, and good character sees that all sin is against God. And then lastly, trust is a motivator to one with good character. Look at verses 6, especially 6. And he left all that he had, meaning Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not all he had, save the bread which he did eat, and Joseph was a goodly person, well favored. Maybe I'll just read the next ones as well. And it came to pass after these things, his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. She said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house. And he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but you, his wife. What was Joseph saying? Your husband has entrusted everything to me. In fact, he doesn't even know all his business dealings. He doesn't even know all that he has. He's entrusted it all to my care. How could I do this great wickedness against God? But because he was trusted by Potiphar, Joseph was motivated to not break that trust. Joseph didn't want to do anything to destroy that trust or to hurt his master. If we have good character, trust, somebody placing trust in us motivates us to honor that trust, doesn't it? Yes. Sometimes we may think that if we show trust in someone, it's just going to open the door for sin. Listen, to a person with good character, and that's key, a person with good character, trust does not cause them to want to sin. Rather, it encourages and motivates them not to sin. So I believe that when we know someone has good character, we need to be willing to show trust in them, realize it'll motivate them, not hurt them. It'll work for children. It'll work for young people. Now, there's a balance here. Understanding it can be overdone. There still needs to be guidance, accountability, responsibility, especially when you're talking about children, young people. Not to understand what I'm saying. But the point is this, that a person with good character sees trust in them as something to keep, not to break. Joseph wasn't perfect. You know, we look at these Bible men and some of these Bible women and see how wonderful they were. And they were. But they weren't perfect. They had flesh and blood like we have. They were capable of making the same choices that we are capable of making. The point is this. Joseph wasn't perfect, but he was a man of good character. None of us are perfect, but we can be, and we need to be, people of good character. You know, whether we're losing at something in life, whatever that is, there's times we're losing. Or whether we're winning, whatever that is, and there's times we're winning. Both of them need to be done with good character. It's that important. You know, what really matters is who we are, not who people think we are. You know, there's a difference. Good character should translate into a good reputation. It should. But be careful. Reputation is simply what people think of us. What really matters is who we are, not who people think we are. Character truly does matter. God help us to have it. Good character. Good character.